morning, everybody. What's going on? We're back here for another live episode. And today, it's exciting for me when we get to talk to fellow Philly people. So stay tuned. Nick Perry's coming up in a few seconds. But right now, I just got to tell you about this show, and every show that we do is brought to you by Next Home Brandywine in Downingtown, Pennsylvania. Our good friend, Mr. Dan Peasy, and his team of professional realtors, they provide you with guidance, knowledge, and information, whether you're a buyer or a seller. Go to nexthomebrandywine.com for all the details or to contact an agent. They do service Philadelphia and all the surrounding counties, but nationwide referrals are available. Be sure to ask for the NH5 listing special. You can call them directly at 484-364-4862. That's 484-364-4862. And don't forget to tell them Totally Driven Entertainment sent you. And here he is, the man, the myth, the Philly legend himself, the one and only Mr. Nick Perry. What's going on, dude?
Hey, man. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. You know, it's funny when I get the emails and I see your name pop up all the time. I'm like, one of these times I'm just like, you know what? I got to talk to him. I got to freaking talk to him. So here we are.
Well, thanks for having me, man.
Dude. So, you know, it's you've had this this wild ride of a career. You know, it's like, as I was getting ready to lay this lamp and getting the questions together, I'm thinking to myself, man, like, you were, being a former member of Silver Tide, I'm thinking to myself, like, you were like one of them bands that rose to the cream of the crop, you know, and were like the band of your hometown. Like, what kind of a feeling was that? And then I see, like, you were like super young. I didn't realize how young you were at the time either.
Yeah, it was crazy. I call it joining the circus, but Silvertide signed a record deal with Clive Davis. I was either 16 or I just turned 17. And, you know, when I say join the circus, that's what it was like. It's like I was in high school one day and the next day it's like I'm on tour in Japan. So it was just like, I mean, it wasn't literally like that, but you know, I digress. It was real fast, you know, and it was a roller coaster ride, you know, to be able to play and tour with, you know, all our heroes. We opened for Van Halen and Aerosmith and ZZ Top and Foo Fighters. And, you know, the list goes on. Alice Cooper was the first tour I did. I was 17 years old, probably, you know, and it's like just a crazy wild ride. And I think at that age, you know, and I've spent quite a bit of time talking about this through my own head and outwardly as well, but it's like at that age, I don't think it's really possible to fully appreciate how rare, how special, mm-hmm. and how incredible that opportunity was, you know, because we just didn't have anything to compare it to, you know.
Right.
So we weren't struggling in the scene for 10 years or 20 years. I did all that after Silvertide, you know, to get back up. But, you know, at that moment in time, that's all we knew. So it was just like you enter this world that's like a bubble, you know, and you've got managers and lawyers and labels and A&R guys and all this stuff. And it was just my job, just, you know, make sure that I was sober enough to play the show every night. Like that was my only responsibility, you know, and the rest was just a free for all. And we certainly took advantage of it, you know, as I think most people sure. would at that age, you know, and we had a great time. But, you know, then you wake up and you're 22 and it's over. I mean, literally over. And you're
right.
like, wow. You know, I dropped out of school. I have no skills. You know, what do I do with the rest of my life? And for me, it wasn't a question. I knew it was going to be music. It was just like, well, how do I carry on and make a living, you know, doing music? And so that's a whole other story.
Yeah, at that point, was that when you like moved out to LA?
Yeah. 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 I didn't know what I was going to end up doing. And again, I didn't have anything to compare it to. It was just like, I wrote songs in my bedroom that then went on the radio and like, we sold 500,000 albums and it's like, that's all I knew, you know?
Right.
So I didn't know from playing other people, I didn't grow up playing covers. And it's like, you know, I was fortunate enough that after some time in California, I landed some really good gigs. One of which was pretty, you know, just a few months after I got there, I landed a spot playing guitar for Perry Farrell from Jane's Addiction, mm-hmm. toured the world with him. And it was just eye opening because I'd only ever done things one way. And then here I am like learning how to do things all these different ways. And in the process, not only learning what I liked, but also what I didn't like. And
right.
through the next 15 years, you know, as I did things here and there, it just always felt like in my heart and my soul that like, I was being called back to just kind of doing what it is that I started doing, which was writing songs in my bedroom that you know, hopefully would go on to move people and for me to be an original, you know, artist and be doing right. my own thing. So really the last 15 years has been a lot of trial and errors, figuring out like how it is I'm going to move forward, finding my own artistic voice, you know, both literally and metaphorically. And so now at this point in my life, to have the opportunity to get a second chance, you know, really sure. it's quite incredible, and it's not lost on me. Now I know how special it is, how rare and how hard it is to get here. Cause I went, you know, all the way down as far as you could go and had to rebuild back up from scratch, you know, with no help, no labels and managers and lawyers. And, you know, I just had to do it on my own.
Right.
So, now I try not to take anything for granted, you know, at all.
Well, here's the crazy thing, like that I was like trying to like picture in my head, because this had been a truly tough decision. Because as you said, you know, when you played for Perry Farrell, but then you end up in Shinedown, which I mean, Shinedown's one of the biggest rock bands in the last 15 years, easily. And you make the decision to leave, and that had to be like, I mean, first off, that's ballsy, because I mean, you had, you know, probably it's, I'm not going to say a dream gig, but it's a great gig with one of the best, you know, bands, like I said, in the 15 years. And, but you felt like you were missing something, and that speaks volumes, but it's also a very scary and ballsy thing to do. Like how long, like in your head, were you saying to yourself, like, this just isn't it for me?
Well, I gave it a good try, and I told the guys in the band, they knew going in, and if they, you know, I don't know what they tell themselves now about what happened or went down, and I certainly have no ill will towards any of them. But I was very clear, you know, they asked me to join the band, and I said no, and initially, because I wanted to
wow.
play my own music. I wanted to write my own songs and lead my own band. And after a few months of going back and forth, you know, I decided to go out and give it a try. And I told him I would give it a try, but you know, there was no guarantee that I was going to, you know, do this forever.
Right.
And I did, I gave it a try, and I didn't half-ass it, you know, like I really gave it a try, but ultimately it really wasn't, you know, it was a weird situation to be in, you know, where it's like, you feel like, and I know I was playing in these arenas and,
mm-hmm.
you know, huge venues and, you know, on occasion, a couple stadiums with some other bands, you know, and it just like, it felt great on one hand, but on the other hand, I almost felt like I was a liar because they weren't my songs.
Right.
You know? And so I don't know. It didn't sit right with me. It's, I don't know how else to describe it. You know,
yeah.
It just didn't sit right with me. So I tried it. I didn't half-ass it. Like I said, I really gave it a shot, but it ultimately wasn't doing it for me. And I thought, you know, as crazy as this sounds, I'd rather be playing for 500 people right now, my own songs, than 50,000 of someone else's songs. And wow. no disrespect to them. It's just
sure, like, sure. Did you like going into that? Was it kind of a thing too, where they said to you, like, you know, they weren't going to let you contribute musically, or?
No, they didn't say that. They didn't say that wow. at all. And the possibility was there to contribute musically over time. It's hard to explain, but just like you get a sense of like, man, I don't belong here. I gotta
right.
leave here quick. And once that idea, it's like a worm, you know, like earworm. Like once it gets in your brain that like you're somewhere where you don't belong, you know, you can't.
Yeah,
you got to yeah. get out. You know,
sure, sure.
So I know they were disappointed, and I feel bad that, you know, I hope I didn't cause, you know, any bummer vibes, but I'm following my heart. And, you know, as far as we know, we only get one shot at this life. So it's like, you know, I really want to do it my own way.
Which then at that point, I guess around that point, is that when you decided to move back to Philly?
Well, I moved back to Philly briefly. I tried to get another band off the ground through the, that again, that 15 year period between Silvertide ending and me doing my own thing now. In between and sometimes simultaneous to doing other people's gigs, whether I was playing for Matt Sorum or Shinedown or Perry Farrell or a few other artists, you know, I've done some stuff with my sister Christina. But in between that stuff, I was always trying to get another original band off the ground. And there are
right.
some that people know about, like Sinai, when I moved back to Philly to start a band with Walt, who was the singer of Silvertide, and Shane, who was the drummer of Jealousy Curve. It was a really fun band, and we just couldn't get it off the ground. And I tried again in another band called Mount Holly. You know, we tried really hard, and we were even signed. And we, you know, it was 4 years out of my life that I like 4 good years. You know, that I really, really tried. But for a variety of reasons, and it's like some of the stuff you just never know. It's like, you know, just because something works on paper doesn't mean it's going to work, doesn't mean it's going to fly. And there's an infinite number of variables that we sometimes are aware of and sometimes that we're not aware of. That's even scarier, as knowing, like, you know, I can do everything I can in my power, but it still might not work. But that's what we've signed up for, you know, so.
Now, you mentioned your sister, Christina. Like, she, around that time, she blew up. So how was that for you? Like, oh my God, like now it's like, here we go. The Perry name is really.
Well, of course, my first emotion and first reaction was just like happiness for her, you know, because like how awesome. It was really a one in a million. Her story specifically is just something that just doesn't happen, you know. And it was a one in a million shot, and it worked. And it not only worked, it went like absolutely massive. You know, she became an absolutely massive artist, you know, seemingly overnight, which just doesn't happen, you know. Even Silvertide, who had a lot of great things that happened quickly, you know, there was still years of working and living in a van, you know. Yeah. We were on tour with Van Halen and we were living in a van.
Right.
You know, like, well, eventually we got a tour bus. Yeah, eventually we had, you know, some stuff started to come through, you know, financially and stuff. But for many, many, many years, even when we were signed, even after we were touring with all these big bands, like, you know, we were really putting in the time in the trenches. So anyway, my first thought was just, I was very happy for her and I still am, you know? You know, we're siblings, so we have like sibling stuff, you know, but I love her dearly. She's great.
Did your parents ever say, why don't you guys sit down and do a nice song together? Like, you know, like the Perrys, do the Perrys.
Yes. Yes. They have said that. And for a moment in time before she got kind of on that rocket, we actually did try to do a brother and sister duo called the Perrys.
Wow.
I've only talked about it a couple times. This is one of the only times that I've ever been asked about it, but you nailed it. You said it, the Perrys. Anyway, it didn't work. We wanted to kill each other. We're like almost the same person, except I have sideburns, you know, like we're very similar. So too much time together, you know, it didn't work then. I don't know if it would work now. I mean, who's to say, but
that's funny. Now, something else that really interests me about you that I saw, which I don't think you're doing anymore, but you would like, I guess you have like the entrepreneur side too, because you had your own line of guitars that you were doing. You were hand-making guitars. And did you have like a place out in LA, like a tattoo shop, guitar shop, barber shop or something?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We opened this crazy store, my wife and I. So my wife comes from a whole long line of like retail experience, managing retail stores. And we had this opportunity that came up and we said yes, where we, you know, essentially got to launch our own business on Melrose Avenue in Hollywood.
Wow.
And we just put everything under one roof that we loved. And we had this idea to call it like the Perry Ink Cartel. It was like a big family. So we had a tattoo artist, a piercer. Excuse me. We sold clothes. I was building guitars in the back room and in a workshop. We then eventually brought in a motorcycle guy. We had a motorcycle shop in the back. We had a barber. It was like this, like, you know, only in Hollywood can you get away with this stuff, you know, but it was really fun. And for a few years, you know, really worked. The only reason we closed the store, and I believe if we had stayed open, it really would have become a thing, because it was such a scene.
Right.
It was a scene. And people came from all over to kind of experience this thing. And I had the idea of maybe even franchising it. But before that happened, my wife got pregnant and I was just getting back into full-time playing, touring. Cause I had the only time in my whole history that I took a little time off from doing writing, recording, touring, producing music full-time was when we opened that store, just cause it required so much of my energy.
Sure.
But once the store was open, then I started getting back into it, because my ambition was not to be a store owner. It's to continue being an artist.
Sure. You know?
But as we found out with retail, it's like a monster, you know, like it's a full-time monster, you know? And ultimately, when she got pregnant, we had to make a decision because there were just not enough hours in the day.
Yeah.
And it was either I had to leave music full time again to go full time in the store, which, as I've explained, was not on my agenda.
Yeah.
Or we had to close the store because we needed, you know, something had to go. So we decided to close the store, and my wife could dedicate her energy to being a great mom, which I think is like the most important job in the world.
Sure.
I went back to music.
You know, it's funny, like as you're talking about that, I'm surprised, especially being out on Melrose. Was there any offers for a reality show? Like, that sounds like a little bit of, like, fun reality show.
We actually filmed two pilots. We never went through with it because, to be honest with you, and for people who follow me and they know like my story and my day to day like vibe, I'm all about authenticity. You know, like I'm from Philly, born and raised in the surrounding area, went to school in the city. And even though I ended up marrying a California girl, spending a bunch of time in California, I'm back on the East Coast now. Like, I'm just, I shoot it straight, man. Like, I have no time for like BS and anything that I feel like is any, you know, some sort of facade in any way. Like,
right.
I like to keep it real, and I'm try to follow this like internal compass, you know, moral compass of authenticity. In the reality show world, I hate to burst anybody's bubble, but it's not real. You know, I mean, maybe some of it's based in some reality, you know, of what may or may not be going on in a certain situation, a certain household or whatever it is. But like, rest assured, like, you know, someone's writing.
Yeah.
Right, those lines. So it's like, as soon as somebody started trying to feed me what to say, I was like, peace. I wasn't having it.
So now it brings us, you have your true project. It seems like this is what you really, you know, all those years was searching to do. Nick Perry and the Underground Thieves. You just put out your debut album last month. First off, how is that? I mean, it's you now. It's your name out there. Do you feel more pressure that way? Is it a scarier endeavor for you?
I mean, yes to all those things, but at the same time, it feels like the most natural thing in the world. It honestly feels like I should have been doing this, you know, all along, to be honest with you. But I know that that's impossible, and that it's only through the trials and tribulations of my journey that I've been able to make it to this point and know what I want, and again, what I don't want.
Right. So
I feel grateful for the experiences I've had. I have very few regrets, but now with, you know, whatever time I have left, you know, for me, this feels like this is the start now of the next 20, 30 years, 40 years of making music, you know, and being an artist, being the artist I was always meant to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I feel like I'm just tapping into what I'm capable of. And that's not saying that with ego. It's just like, like every day I'm just realizing, like, you know, especially as a singer and a front man, like, you know, wow, like I didn't know I could do that. You know, it's been great. You know, it's been really fun. Of course it's scary, but I'm trying not to think about it. I as I've learned again through life experience or whatever, it's like thinking gets in the way of everything.
Yeah.
So, you know, try not to think too much and just show up and do it kind of thing.
I hear you. Now, how about, you mentioned earlier how, I mean, you are independent artist. So, I mean, there's the whole kind of entrepreneur thing going on still, being the independent artist. You got to do all that hustle and, you know, promotions, everything. It all falls back onto you pretty much.
Yeah, that hasn't changed. It's tough. There are some days where I'm really wiped out from it. You know, in many ways, I would love to just wake up in the morning and just be the artist solely again. And I guess that's what I'm working towards. I've very slowly started to let in, because so many other projects got messed up, and not only by band members, but by business team members.
Right.
I've been very cautious about like who's involved in this.
Mm-hmm.
And now I'm starting to loosen a little bit, let people in to help, because I can't do it all on my own, especially as you keep moving up levels. There's just too much to do. But sure. I am still handling, a lot. And over time, I'd like to see, me delegating some more and more and more. We're talking with some potential people, some partnership opportunities. You know, I'm really open to just seeing where this goes, but now with the insight to know and hopefully like not get screwed again, because it's really hard to work so hard for something. And it's like your whole life and your whole world, but to someone else wearing a suit, it's just like another, line of data on a return, that's a bummer. So I'm trying to avoid that at all costs.
I can imagine. Now it's funny. You mentioned, you're kind of cautious to let people in, because I'm thinking to myself, here's the Underground Thieves, and you're seeing this more and more in this modern era of music where bands are doing a lot more, possibly three pieces. I'm even seeing a lot more two pieces now because of the fact that it's hard to keep members, and they're also seeing financial situations where it's actually cheaper to have less members and more money to spread around. And you come out and you put this eight-piece band together.
Well, it's ebbed and it's flowed. Yeah. I mean, first of all, when I sit down to embark on any kind of artistic adventure, and maybe this is smart, maybe it's not, it's probably not, but all the consideration for anything else outside of the art is secondary. It's like, is the art right? Is it right? Is it real? Is it doing what it needs to do? Is it authentic? Is it making me feel something, And with the Thieves, I knew going in that there was going to be a period, because I experienced it in every band I've ever been in, even Silvertide, before we stumbled upon our magic lineup formula. Behind the scenes, there was a little bit of shuffling going on. So I knew that that's just a natural part of whatever, but because I am who I am, and I have people looking, quite often in. So I knew it was going to take place a little bit more in the open, but I knew that there was going to be some ebb and flow to how this band kind of found its way. Just because, again, out of experience, I've done it a bunch. So, when I started the band, I think it was seven people, then it went to eight, then it went to six, then it went to 10. I tried a bigger thing with like horns and whole thing. And then we finally ended up settling on a six member band. Every single member is from Philadelphia.
Nice.
And there's something special about making music with people that you have history with outside of just, a musical connection. We're from the same area. We're from the same like social, economic, religious upbringing. It's like you share a bond, with people. Well, even if it's an unspoken thing, you're walking down the street and go birds, you share this connection with people, right? Am I right?
I'll tell you a quick funny story. It just happened yesterday. Like I moved to Nashville last year. So we're taking a walk around our development yesterday, and a guy sitting on his front porch waves to us. He goes, "Hey," starts talking to us. And me and my fiance, we start talking to him, and he says, "Well, where are you guys from?" And my fiance's from Brooklyn. I said, "I'm from Philly." He goes, "I'm from Wildwood." Gives me a big hug. And then he starts talking food. Next thing I know, 20 minutes later, he's knocking at my front door and drops off Scrapple.
Oh, my God.
Right. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. So I get it.
It's incredible. Yeah. So that's a thing that we all share. Mm-hmm. You know it. People who are listening who know it. I don't know that I found that in other places as much. I'm sure it's not exclusive to that area, but I feel like if there is something stronger in the water there or whatever it is, the water,
the water
that bonds us together. But anyway, so the Thieves, it's a six piece band. We all have this history. Brian, my bass player, he was in Silvertide with me. We've been playing together since I was 15, 16 years old. The other guys in the band, they all came from other great Philly bands that were coming up in the scene with Silvertide at the same time. So I've been making music with these guys, for almost 20 years, some of them. So wow. there's this bond. That being said, well, I'm on the road. I'm talking to you from Virginia right now. We're playing four shows with Blackberry Smoke for social distanced shows, which I'm very grateful to be doing. And for these particular shows, I had to slim it down to a trio just because of logistics.
Wow.
And it's something brand new. Tonight's the first one, so I'll let you know how it goes. But you know, at this point in the journey, it's like, and everybody is cool and they get it and they know it. They're all part of this thing and they love being in it. But they know this is like, I've had, you know, quite the journey, and there's been a lot of no's along the way. Right now, I'm saying yes to everything that comes up. I'm saying yes, and we'll figure out the logistics and how it looks later. But you know, and through this pandemic, you know, I've had to do quite a few performances, solo acoustic guitar, just singing and playing the songs. I'm grateful now I can do that. I have the ability to sing my own songs and nobody is like, you know, bent about it. You know, they're happy for me. You know, I get to carry on, and it's like, I'm going to move forward no matter what I have to do, because this is now, it's under my own name. Now, like, you know, I can, which feels great, you know, because I, again, I've heard, you know, there've been so many opportunities over the years that I had to pass on because this person couldn't go or this person couldn't do it. And it's just like, I'm at the point again, where it's like, I'm going to say yes to everything, you know?
Was that a scary thing? Like these shows you got coming up, these drive-in shows you're doing, was it kind of an awkward situation to approach those members that aren't going to be part of the show to say like, look, we're just going to do this as a three piece?
Well, again, given the Philly thing and given the history together, it's like, we can be really open with each other. You know what I mean? If somebody's like been out of shape, they'll say it. It's, you know, right. Like nobody's walking on eggshells, but we just did 3 full band shows last month. 2 were drive-ins. We opened for a band called The Struts.
Yeah.
And one was a headlining on the day the album came out. We did a live stream from the Ardmore Music Hall in Ardmore, Pennsylvania. And we did all 3 of those shows, full band, full crew. It was a big production, you know, because we have a production, we have a full thing, and it felt great, and it was wonderful, and everybody was really happy to be doing it. And then these came up, and it was like, look, I got to go do these things. This is what it's going to be. Nobody has any issues, you know. We'll regroup next week when I'm back. You know, it's like,
right.
It's all good, and I think that's the way it should be, and that's the way it's got to be, especially at this moment in time. And I think this is interesting because there's so many things that are. We've not, I don't want to say taken for granted, but like to move forward right now during a worldwide pandemic, during all this, so you know, there's so much uncertainty. Everything that we thought was one way has now been like flipped on its head.
Yeah.
Which you know, is what it is. We're all trying to make the most of it that we can, stay positive, you know, try not to whatever, just be down in the dumps all the time, because it's a tough time for a lot of people all around the world, you know, and especially in the States. There's a lot of people who are in pain and are suffering, and we're sympathetic and empathetic to that, you know. But at the same time, you know, we don't want to just sit in our basements and cry all day. We want to try to help, at least from my perspective, try to help put something positive and uplifting into the universe, because that's what at least that we can do. You know, that at least that's maybe the only thing I can contribute to society right now is, you know, when you hear Feeling Good on the radio, which we chose on purpose to put out that song, because I hope that it uplifts people, you know.
Right.
The song is doing well. It's rising up the charts. People are hearing it. Maybe it's giving them 5 minutes a day of more joy than they would have had previously. So I don't know. I guess what I'm saying is, if we can contribute in some small, minute way to uplifting somebody, especially at a time as heavy and as intense as this is.
Right.
then that would make me feel good, you know. But I think the only way forward to do that is to be a little bit flexible and malleable. Is that a word? Malleable? You know, because things are changing and because there's no rule book.
Right.
You know, so we're all having to be a little bit flexible. And I think that that's not inherently a bad thing. But obviously it's a tough time.
Now, how are these shows? Like, I'm really curious. Like, you know, that's like the new norm for this day and age right now, is these drive-in shows. And I mean, I saw you guys did actually one at the Citizens Bank parking lot.
We did under the Philly skyline. It was awesome.
Yeah, like how are these shows? I mean, it's kind of like just almost like a backyard giant party. Just people were in their cars.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, the first moment we went up there, it was a little weird, and I knew it was going to be weird just because I'm used to doing it the other way for 20 years. But I felt like the learning curve was a steep one. And, you know, you kind of get the hang of it pretty quick that you're not going to hear like a bunch of cheering in your face. You're going to hear cars honking and windshield wipers, horns, and then lights flashing. It was a trip. Like, in the end, the experience, I think, was a totally positive one. Even if it was slightly weird and just a little bit, different. But I think as far as a way to move forward in this moment in time, if it's this or sit at home, I mean, like, it's a no-brainer. Like, it's
sure.
it's overall a wonderful experience, both of the ones that we've done so far. And I have no reason to think that the four we're doing this week, you know, between this week and next week, that they're going to be any different. I think that people are excited and they want to experience some sense of live music again. And even if they're distanced further away or sitting in their cars, whatever it is, at least we are aligning our energy and our, you know, like, one of the most cool things about live events, and it's same thing, I think, with sports, the same thing with anything that you go to theater, you go see a show or a play. It's like anybody in that room or in the field or in the stadium or whatever it is, like, for that moment of time, if it's an hour long show or a 2 hour show or a 3 hour event or whatever it is, for that time, everybody's like minds and their bodies and their spirits are like connected to this singular thing. And that's powerful. Whether people, yeah. I don't think people even think about it, but like, that's a powerful force. And I think that that's one of the things that people miss the most, whether they know it or not. You know, it's not even specifically that it's a show or a play or a, it's like getting in the moment, turning off the thinking brain and just like really being connected to something with everybody else to share a shared experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Do you think this is going to be like the new norm now? Like, even going forward, like, say when things go back to normal, do you think promoters or bands are going to keep doing these drive-in style shows? You think there might be a new thing to it?
Well,
kind of like the live stream as well. I mean, that's been
it's taken off. I mean, I'll say this: I think that at least for the time being, until things go back, if they do, you know, we hope that they do, but there's no guarantees in life. But if things have the opportunity to go back to where they were, you know, I think until then, this is a great viable option. You know,
right.
The live streaming, the drive-ins, will they stick around if the other comes back? I can't answer that, and I don't know. I think it's cool, and it's certainly worth a consideration. I don't know that the money is in it. You know, to make it, I mean, maybe, I mean, look, man, anything's possible. I mean,
right.
I think drive-ins are cool just as drive-in movie theaters, you know,
yeah,
I think it's a cool format no matter what. Maybe people are going to rediscover how cool that this is. And that would be cool. Cause I'm all about, you know, I'm from Philly. So I'm semi-tough, but I'm also a hippie. So it's like, I'm all about like, you know, shared experience and communal things and like, you know, any opportunity that, you know, you could put people in, like we're talking about, like, you know, some shared experience, a festival, a show, a concert, a drive-in. Like, I just think it's cool and it's important. So I hope that no matter what, that we're carrying on, there's always a way to carry on. I'm very impressed that the industry has turned around so quickly to be able to, you know, afford artists the ability to do this and concert goers as well.
Right. Now, the album itself, I saw an article, I guess, you know, when you were announcing the whole new band and everything from last year, where the plan was to do kind of like a single a month. Did you end up doing it that format or?
No, again, there, you know, we were writing the story as we were living it. So we started doing that and we released like 7 or 8 singles.
Okay.
And then the decision was made once the pandemic hit, because we'd been recording and we've recorded a lot of songs. It's not just the 10 that are on that album, but we've actually got quite a few in the can. And when things, you know, first started to kind of come up with the pandemic, we made the decision to take what we had, take the best of what we had, but because so many other new songs had been written in that time, you know, not all of them that we released as singles, we felt like were going to be worthy of the album. And some other ones that hadn't been released yet, we thought were worthy of inclusion. So we pulled everything down, remixed, remastered, did the whole thing, and then put it all back up as Sun Via, which I think confused a few people as we were doing it. I was trying to explain it to everybody as we were doing it, but I think everyone's got it now, and it was worth the wait. I mean, people are and I'm so grateful for it, but people seem to be blown away by the record. It's doing very well, especially for an independent release. So I'm just a grateful and humble guy and excited.
You know, it was a weird thing. I saw you had put up the other day, you know, like chart positions and all the album, and two scary things that I noticed. First off, like, I didn't recognize any of the names on there besides you and the person above you, Robbie Krieger.
Well, I think that chart was the new album artist chart.
Okay.
So maybe that, I don't feel bad. I didn't either. So,
okay.
You know, when I'm home, man, I listen to vinyl from the 60s and 70s. Like, you know, I've been listening to Bob Marley, Catch a Fire all week. So it's like, I'm not really, I mean, I do keep a vague sense of what's going on, but my heart is in, like, you know, listening to old records. So that's just the truth, whether it's good or bad.
Hey, you know what? Like, I just said this the other day on Facebook, as a matter of fact, like, anymore, all I catch myself listening to is Sinatra and Elvis.
Dude, that's awesome. Great choices. Timeless.
Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There are a bunch of cool new bands that I dig, but I'm not, like, as actively seeking them out. Someone sends me something, I'm like, oh, yeah, shit, this is cool. But I'm not as actively, like, you know, trying to search it out. Again, there's just so much good music. It's like, I haven't even finished digesting, you know, the classics yet. And I don't know, will we ever? It's just like, there's so many records, you know. It's like, you know, I love Steely Dan. There's still like three Steely Dan records that I haven't even listened to yet, because I've spent, you know, 15 years trying to digest the ones that I have, you know. So it's like,
I'm still trying to digest Kiss from the 70s, like, you know, and I grew up in that era. Like,
yeah,
it's still hard to get away from that stuff.
So, hey, what a wonderful problem to have.
Absolutely. So now, what's the plan like now for the rest of the year for you guys? Like, any, are you just still writing the book day by day as it goes, or?
It is still very much a day by day thing. You know, we're in touch with our agent. We have like a weekly call every Tuesday to just kind of assess where the industry is and what will be perhaps available to us option wise and what's not. You know, every day there's some development, something's changing, you know, sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse. We're just following it in real time, you know?
Right.
All I can say is that we're grateful to be doing these drive-in shows. I hope that we have the opportunity to do a few more before the weather turns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're just going to keep doing what we do. Obviously, this is the very beginning of the album cycle promo, so we're going to be on this record for a while. But I would imagine, and I'm not there yet mentally, but I would imagine, you know, before too long, I'm going to start investigating and flirting with new song ideas for where we could go next. So that's always a looming thing. You know, that will happen. Well, we will start working on album two, you know, when we have the mental capacity to do so, you know.
Sure.
But right now, we're just excited to hopefully share this record with as many people as possible and play as many places as we can. Obviously, it's not an ideal time to be launching a record, but we are glad that we did it. And, you know, we had the opportunity to press pause on it. I have some friends, some peers of mine who are sitting on really good records, and no judgment. But for us, it felt like the appropriate thing was to release it. Like I said in the beginning of the call, hopefully put some positive vibes into the world. You know, share this art that we worked so hard on for so long. Hopefully it, you know, lifts people up, and that's what we're doing.
I think it's probably better to release it now, because I've been saying, you know, for the last 6 months, you know, with this whole pandemic, all your peers, they're in their basement right now writing songs for that new album. And I think by the end of 2020, 2021, there's going to be such a bombardment of music. It's going to be really a lot harder to get heard. Not that it's not, you know, it's so hard already to get heard, but it's going to be even harder, I think, next year.
Quite possibly. Yeah. 2021 is going to have a ton of records.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Did you, like, once this whole pandemic hit and everything, like, was that a thing too? Like, do we release it? Do we not release it? And it's almost too, like, you're looking at this, like, kind of like a business owner as well. This is a music business, and a lot of people seem to forget that.
Yeah. Well, like I was just saying a minute ago, there was a moment of hesitation and, like, what is the right move forward? you know, ultimately we decided we had it done. It was already mixed. It was mastered. It was ready to go. All we had to do was push the trigger, you know, to print vinyl and to put it up on the digital platforms. And we decided we were going to go for it. Obviously there was like a 3-month lead time. So we had to make the decision in May that we were going to release it in August. And I'm glad we did. I'm glad we did because the response has been wonderful. People seem to really love it. It does seem to be, you know, inspiring people and putting some joy out there. I get messages and, you know, kids send me covers of the songs every day. It's incredible. It's awesome.
That's awesome. That is freaking awesome. So where is the best place for everybody to get the album?
Well, nickperrymusic.com, Perry with an I, it's Italian, P-E-R-R-I, nickperrymusic.com is kind of the hub. From there, you can link off to our merch website, which has physical vinyls, CDs, t-shirts. It's obviously on all the streaming platforms, on all the purchase platforms digitally. All that stuff can all link from our website.
Nice.
So it's everywhere. It's everywhere that hopefully you, you know, listen to music.
Now, how about that? Going back to the whole concert thing, you know, part of the modern era of concerts is, especially for newer bands, they're out there doing the meet and greet, you know, they're at the merch table. That's not something you guys can do now, right?
No, it's all off the table.
Yeah. Wow.
But again, we're grateful for what we do get. You know, I'm going to get on stage tonight and play, you know, really loud rock music through my Marshall, you know, non-master volume amplifier. It's going to be really fun. That's what, you know, like I've just been waiting all day. We're going to go here in a minute and start packing up and making our way to the venue. But it's like, you know, I couldn't even sleep last night. I was just laying in bed, like excited to play today.
Nice.
You know? So I'll take, we'll take what we can get.
Cool. Which tonight you guys, you're in Roanoke, Virginia, like you said, and you're at Dr. Pepper Park, is it?
Yep.
Nice.
And cool, then got a couple shows in PA, Western PA, and then we're going up to Massachusetts. I mean, it's a beautiful time of year, as you know, on the East Coast, September is like just awesome.
Yeah.
So it's a real nice time of year, and hopefully, you know, we don't get too much rain, but I think the show is a rain or shine anyway.
Right, right. So I got one final question for you, being the fact that you are from Philly and you are half Italian. Let's see if, you know, and I'll give you, if you could get this wrong, because you're only half Italian, but is it gravy or sauce?
Well, I already know the answer. I mean, well, my dad was born and raised in Italy. So he came over in 1959. So he's as Italian as you could get. But I grew up in an American household. So we always said sauce. But I know that technically it's gravy. So there's the answer.
There's the answer. Nice. Nick, this is great talking to you, man. Congrats
great
on the album.
Talking to you too.
You know, get down to Nashville because you might get down to Nashville before I get back to Philly.
Okay. would love to see you. Thank you for having me and thank you for the support. I do appreciate it.
Absolutely, man. Congrats again and talk to you soon.
Thank you, bud.
Take care.
Peace.